We've been doing this series, Fighting Dark Satanic Forces with the Full Armor of God, and we're doing a deep dive into Ephesians chapter 6, 10 through 20. I think sometimes it's a helpful reminder that when we come to church, we come to worship God, but we also come to learn about God and about His interaction in our lives and what He does for us, what His expectations are for us. It's not religion. What we do here Sunday morning is not religion. We actually believe in a person, in the Godhead, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We actually believe that this person, out of love, created the world and the universe in which we live. We actually believe that He loves us. And we not only believe that He loves us, most of us here have experienced that love. Some of us have been rescued from a terrible trajectory in their life that was going to take them places that would have been destructive, and we know it, and we are deeply thankful that He's done that for us. Some of us have experienced His healing touch, His mercy, and His grace in that way. Some of us experience things in life that could only be described as destructive and sinful. And I don't say that in an accusatory way. It's just that we had crap in our lives, and we didn't know how to be rescued from that crap. And so God pulled us up out of it and cleansed us, made us feel whole, better about ourselves. But this is not religion. I know when we come in, we stand up, we sit down, we have a certain order and things like that, but that's all to facilitate this personal relationship that we have with Jesus. That's what it's for. Because some of us, you know, we just may not know how to do that. And we are unashamed. Unashamed of that relationship with this all-powerful, all-knowing, all-present God of the universe, who is so powerful that He can live outside the universe and yet live among us here on this tiny little blue planet in the backwaters of the universe, someplace that we have no idea. You know, to be truly omnipotent, you have to be not only capable of being extraordinarily big, but extraordinarily small. I mean, those things have to be both true. We also believe that there is this conflict in the world in which we live, and that in the metaphysical, the beyond the physical part of the world in which exists, that there is this conflict between dark satanic forces who, out of spite to the loving God who has created us, is working to destroy our lives. But it's not like He showed up to our front door and said, "Hey, I'm here. I want to destroy your life. What do you think of that, huh? Get on board. Let's go." He wants to destroy our lives through deception. He wants some of us to believe that when we walk through that door that, okay, this is all about religion. It's really not about God. It's really not about Jesus or Christ. It's about religion. There are some who walk through that door in the past who they've seen so much in terms of what they see on TV, and they see the celebrity pastors, and they see the ways in which some of those who call themselves to believers, I mean, and I liked what Caleb said earlier about how clearly there have been horrible things done in the name of Christ or in the name of God, but it wasn't God, it was those who were doing it. So I would ask you, if you haven't yet, I would ask you to stretch your minds and to be open to this person that we believe in, that we worship, that we have a loving relationship with, that we have submitted and surrendered ourselves to. We have not submitted and surrendered ourselves to a religion. I've probably lost two or three jobs in my lifetime or had to move from two or three jobs in my lifetime because I would not participate in their religion. I wanted to give deference to Jesus, to the relationship that I have with him, to what I believe he calls us to through the scriptures. So I'd ask all of us to consider that this just might actually be a faith in a person who loves us, who created us, and who has better things for us, who calls us to himself, who wants us to enjoy him in all of eternity forever and ever. Even believers forget that sometimes. Even believers sometimes come to church and they do religion. They don't do worship. They don't do Jesus. I would say up until about 25 years ago, the Judeo-Christian faith dominated the worldview of the United States. The Judeo-Christian worldview dominated. And within maybe the last 25, maybe 30 years, that Judeo-Christian worldview is no longer by a long shot influential in the world in which we live. The Germans have an interesting word. The word is called Zeitgeist. So that's several slides down. There we go. Thank you. And the Zeitgeist is a German word that means the spirit of this age. The spirit of this age. And the spirit of this age is a lot of things. But part of what the spirit of the age is when we talk about the Zeitgeist is to be cynical when it comes to things of faith, when it comes to authority, when it comes to things like universals and absolutes that we have believed in for 2,000 years in the West up until just very recently. What would you say the Zeitgeist is of this age? What would you say the spirit of this age is? The time that we are living now?
Make yourself happy.
Happiness would be part of the Zeitgeist, yeah. I mean, all that matters is that you're happy, whatever that means, however subjective that can be. I think this is the Zeitgeist, largely. Whatever I feel that I am, whatever I feel what is, that is truth for me. It's all predicated on feelings, not facts or what is true, really, truly true, or really real. This is the ultimate deception. Because stemming from whatever I feel that I am, whatever I feel, what is, that is truth for me, where that eventually goes is self-deification. Which is kind of interesting, don't you think, since when Eve had her encounter with the serpent in the garden and he encouraged her to eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, she said, well, if I do, I will surely die, because that's what God said, what would happen. He says, you will not surely die, because God knows that if you eat of that fruit, you will become like him. And I think that's the whole of human history, is a way that we can find our, some way in which we can exercise power to lord ourselves over other people on some level. We all see it in middle school. Who has the best clothes? Who has the wealthiest parents? Who drives the nicest car? Who has the biggest, the most toys? And we lord it over. We use it as power to leverage. I want to say, as I talk about this armor of God, and particularly about this, the armor of God as a polemic, the breastplate of righteousness that we read in Ephesians 6, 14b. And I don't know why I have this morning silencing, but it must have snuck in there for some reason. But the word polemic means a strong argument for, a very strong argument for. Because this is part of the reason why we dismiss God as maybe just being religion. Because God insists on righteousness. And righteousness cramps our style. Righteousness gets in the way of being happy, of doing what we want to do, when we want to do it, how we want to do it. But righteousness is one of those words, it's one of those biblical words for which there are very few contenders in terms of the importance of the word itself, or a word in the biblical text. So, I want to, and I don't know how far I get, I only have 10 minutes, so I may have to only go so far and then finish it next week. But I want to give a strong argument about the need, the necessity of righteousness, not only to please God, but righteousness to survive the attacks from the enemy. Because if we think that we can manage our lives, if we think that we can have any success over what may be the second most powerful being aside from the Godhead, without righteousness, then we have been deceived. Righteousness is that important. In other words, God has an expectation of how we should conduct our lives. He has given us that standard that we can incorporate into our lives. And when we die and go into the next world, righteousness will be the determining factor about whether or not we can be in eternity forever. So, reading from the text here, I'm giving you the broader context where the Apostle Paul, again, he was writing to the Ephesians, who, in the context of that particular Greek city, had been had a long-term fascination with witchcraft and the occult, which is why the Apostle Paul takes this tact here that he takes. He says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. So the Apostle Paul was under house arrest in Rome. He was probably chained to a centurion. And as he's writing this text, he's trying to give them a graphic image about how you would fight these dark forces. And so what does he do? But that he takes what was then the most fearsome warrior on the planet, the Roman centurion, and he borrows from their imagery, and he likens that armor to certain things in the Christian life. He goes on to say, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. If the Ephesians had been messing around with the occult, they knew exactly what Paul was talking about here. And if you think that the occult is not a big deal in our time, then you have not been studying the culture. Therefore, he says, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. So any warrior who falls usually dies. A warrior who stands is having some kind of success. I mean, that's how it would have been seen. So stand, therefore, having fastened on the belt of truth, which I talked about last week, and having put on the breastplate of righteousness. So the Apostle Paul addresses truth. When he talks to the armor, the very first thing he talks about is truth. The second thing that he talks about is righteousness. And he likens righteousness, according to the centurion soldier, he likens that righteousness as to the breastplate of righteousness. Now, Paul also says, and said this to another group of Christians in the city of Corinth, he says this, in this text, understand, this is a military conflict. It is a military conflict where people get injured and die. No Roman soldier, no group of Roman soldiers, no legionnaires went into a particular region and said, hey, we're here, better surrender. Okay, great. Let us have your stuff and all your women and children. That's not what happened. What happened was horrific. It was horrific. People lost limbs. People were gutted. People suffered and died horrible deaths from infection or slow bleeding to death or whatever. So the Apostle Paul is not only incorporating this idea of a warrior, he is equally incorporating this idea of a war. We've all probably seen a movie or two where there was this massive conflict taking place. And there were certain people in that conflict who didn't want to believe that the conflict was actually necessary or real or true. And they were in denial. And because they were in denial, other people got killed because of it. It's this. So this armor that we have is designed to fight a war. And the war must be fought. And you can deny that the war is there. You can ignore it or try. You can do all of those things. But at some point, either you and or people that you love will become a casualty because you refused to engage the reality of the war itself. So Paul says to the Christians in the city of Corinth, which was the city of Corinth, if you went to the city of Corinth, it would look like a lot of places in the United States today. Just wildly, I mean wildly sinful, especially when it came to sexual sin. So anyway, he says, the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but a divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and everyday lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. So he's talking about what we as Christians do, what he as an apostle did. The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but of divine power to destroy. To destroy. War destroys strongholds. We destroy arguments an everyday lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God. Well, they did it better than we do it today. Destroying those arguments. And take every thought captive to obey Christ. Every thought we have, we take it captive in order to obey Christ. We submit our thoughts to the person and to the power of Christ. But there is a second reading of this text that I've edited and that I've inserted some other things to make the point even more clear. Here's the second reading. The weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but with the whole armor of God. But the divine power to destroy strongholds. That is, those strongholds are the gates of hell. When Peter makes his confession of Jesus, and Jesus says to Peter, "Blessed are you, Peter, because by your confession, the gates of hell will not prevail." So the gates of hell are not attacking us, but we are attacking the gates of hell. That's what is meant by that text. But the divine power to destroy strongholds, example, the gates of hell, found in Matthew 16, 18, and the spiritual forces in the heavenly places that Paul talks about in the preceding verse, we destroy those. And we destroy arguments and everyday lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ. The whole armor of God is designed not only for our protection, but the whole armor of God is designed to destroy satanic strongholds that look really nice, but they are not. To destroy the gates of hell, the spiritual forces of evil and the heavenly places, strongholds. The whole armor of God is designed to destroy satanic strongholds, the gates of hell, and spiritual forces in the heavenly realms. Can you take it to the next slide there, please? The whole armor of God is designed to destroy satanic strongholds, the gates of hell, and the spiritual forces in the heavenly realms. You might think that the whole armor of God is, that as we don it, that it's mostly kind of like defensive to protect ourselves. Part of it is, as is the breastplate of righteousness. But the whole armor of God is designed to destroy strongholds. Part of the stronghold that I wanted to address this morning is, this is not a religion. It is a relationship with Christ. And every one of us belong to the family of God. And as the family of God, we love Him, we serve Him, we surrender, we submit, we serve Him so that we can destroy those strongholds. And you know why we destroy those strongholds? Because those strongholds are designed, they are committed to your destruction and to the destruction of people that you love. So I'm just going to conclude with this, and I wish I could read it to you, but I'm often amazed at the lightheartedness with which people talk about what it might mean to go to hell. I mean, if you can imagine being in a place where there is nothing good, nothing of any vitality, life-giving, that everything is just consumed. It's just a black hole. It just sucks and absorbs and consumes ravenously anything that might be good. A number of weeks ago, I talked about what that might look like, because one of my literary mentors is a guy named C.S. Lewis, and so in his book, The Screwtape Letters, he talks about how And he gets this, I think, from the biblical text. He talks about how that those people who end up in hell, that when they do end up in hell, they spend eternity being consumed by beings stronger than them. Beings stronger than them who consume them over eternity. And there is nothing they can do. For those of us who go to heaven, we spend all of eternity being filled with Christ, made whole. We flourish. They have been deceived. Don't you be deceived. You are donning the armor to fight against strongholds that exist only to destroy you and the people that you love. Now, maybe for some of you that just seems a little too fantastical. Then, if so, pray about it. I mean, actually pray about it. I dare you. I challenge you to pray about it. Because I'm pretty sure that once you pray about it, you'll be on my side. So I'm going to have to finish this particular one next week. Everything that we did here today was of the Lord. And I thank you all for praying for Ruth and Caleb for your wonderful testimony. This is just who we are as a church. And I pray that you will come next. I pray that you will come next Sunday, because it is a polemic about righteousness. It's a strong argument, a very strong argument, about why righteousness, the breastplate of righteousness, is so important.